Chaf Aleph, 21. Aleph would be a, so start from the beginning, okay. Yeah, I think, verse 9, I think we did. That simply says, it's better to sit at the edge of a roof than to have a quarrelsome wife when you have friends around. That's what the Gra says, because once again, not only is the lack of shalom bayis itself a very destructive thing, but if other people know what's going on, that makes it much more embarrassing. How do they tell the story? It's a cute story about a man that wanted a get, and the Rev wanted to know what the problems were in the marriage. So he says, I'm not going to say Lashon Hara about my wife. He says, I'm sorry, you know, I'm not going to say. So after the get, the Rev was curious. Actually, he shouldn't ask, but the Rev wanted to know, you know, tell me what the problem is now that she's not your wife. He says, now it's not relevant anymore. So what do you need to know? Okay. All right. So Pasuk Yud says, Nefesh Rasha Ifsara. The soul of a Rasha, Ifsa. The word soul is a feminine, so Ifsa is a verb meaning desires. The word tava comes in from that. Desires evil. Lo yuchan bi'einav re'eyu. His friend will not find favor in his eyes. So now the way the Gra describes it is the following, because the Chara, there's, if it just means an evil person gets pleasure out of doing sin, it's not really symmetrical to the fact of the friend not finding favor in his eyes. So look at what the Gra says. The Gra says that Ifsara means Shemisava Lios Poel Ra Valiros Biraas Zulaso. Okay, so this is the characteristic. A person that is a Rasha gets pleasure at seeing the downfall and the shame of others. We call that Schadenfreude. You get a joy out of people's downfall. And therefore, even your friend, somebody that's supposed to be someone who, that you care about, finds no favor in your eyes. You actually are happy.
What's the word for downfall in this?
Huh?
What's the word for downfall in
this? The word ra means bad that happens to your friend.
Oh.
Right? So that's how he connects it. He says that a bad-hearted person gets pleasure in downfall. Now, that's very different. Sometimes we get angry, but at least a person regrets it, a person feels bad. But the Rasha gets a certain pleasure in things that happen to other people. Now, we know that Chazal actually identify one of the people that don't have a share in the world to come, although that's a very strict view, is somebody that's called Mischabed Biklon Chavera. Now, Mischabed Biklon Chavera does not mean I shame somebody. It just means I get honor through somebody else's disgrace, meaning even if I had nothing to do with it at all, but I get a certain pleasure, let's say, that I look good because somebody made a mistake. Like you might have, for example, people who are both speechers or people giving divrei Torah or something, and somebody flubs it up. So another person might get a certain, okay, that makes me look much better, or whatever it would be. But that's mamash in Avera, that's called Ein lo chelek v'olam haba, because one gets pleasure in the downfall of another person. And that is defined as the nefesh rasha, the soul of the rasha gets pleasure in other people's downfall, even his own friends. Meaning, af re'eyu lo yuchan bi'enav, v'yaf l'ra'as re'eyu yismach. He rejoices even in the downfall of others. So that's how he interprets this. What did Rav Chaim say? Rav Chaim said, I mentioned this mashal before. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik used to say, when we talk about the midah of being a zealot is a person who stands up, like Pinchas, he stands up for the glory of Hashem, and when he sees Averos, he gives Musar, he wants to eradicate them. He doesn't stand silent. Sounds like a very good midah. So Rav Chaim once compared what's called true zealotry, L'shem Shemayim, with a false type of kanos. He compared it to a housewife who has mice in her house, and she buys a cat. Like in Yerushalayim, you often see these wild cats, which were originally domesticated to hunt down mice. So he says, to some degree, the housewife and the cat have a common agenda. Both see it as their role that if there are mice, it should capture the mice and rip them up. But the difference is, the housewife would be much happier if there'd be no mice at all to kill. But the cat would be sorely disappointed. The cat gets a certain pleasure in finding the mice and ripping them up. So Rav Chaim said, a real kanoi for the sake of heaven gets no pleasure in exposing people's shortcomings. There's no joy, I found another Epicurus. It's the other way around. A person's heart is sad that Hashem's name is being desecrated, that mitzvahs are not being kept, and there's genuine rachmanis for the Jews themselves who are not keeping the mitzvahs and the like. And if you have to take a tough stand, if you have to issue a denunciation, whatever it would be, it's really a last resort, and you do so with reluctance and with sadness, as opposed to a certain mindset in which we want to find the apikoros of the week, the apikoros of the month. We want to comb somebody's writings, like Steinsaltz, you know, it's written thousands of pages. Let's find, you know, page 150 of some book in which something about halacha changes. Okay. You know, people look and comb and are medayik and medayik and medayik, you know, to look for apikoros. So Rav Chaim, of course, he didn't say it about this. I don't want to misattribute, but basically Rav Chaim says that that's a type of kanos in which you get joy in exposing the shortcomings of others, and it's a getter of what Chazal call miskabet beklon chavera.
Sounds like comedia.
Well, yeah, I mean, you get honor in exposing the shortcomings of others, which is also, of course, the very convenient excuse for us not engaging in our own cheshbon hanefesh, because if we can find people who we can allege are worse than us, that can absolve us of any duty of introspection. Right? So that's kind of the what's called a nefesh ra. Okay. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Bianosh letz yechkam pesi ubahaskiel lechacham yikach das. A letz is a scoffer, right? Leitzonos is that quality of cynicism in which everything is disparaged. People try to improve themselves, and the Leitz is the one that says, what's the purpose? Nothing will ever happen. The rabbis are hypocrites anyway. That's the idea of Leitzonos. Now, we know the word Leitz is used quite often in the Book of Mishlei to describe this negative characteristic. The Mesilas Yesharim says about Leitzonos, interesting, he has a very, very famous, evocative phrase. He says, Leitzonos achas doche mea tochachos. One Leitzonos can push aside 100 Musar thoughts that one is thinking about. You see this sometimes. You see it among teenagers, you see it among adults as well. Sometimes you can be in a yeshiva. I mean, I've experienced these moments myself where, you know, people are very inspired. They're elevated. A certain mood was created, a mood that may have been very difficult to create, in which people are serious and dedicated. And then somebody makes, now again, it's not just a simple joke, but they kind of make a joke about which kind of disparages or makes fun of the moment. And the whole mood that had been built up so carefully is really destroyed. And that's what Mesilas Yesharim is saying. So a Leitz is a person who kind of destroys everything with cynicism and saying that it's not real. Now, eventually, the Leitz gets punished in some way or the other. And we are told that the Pesi is the simple, naive person. The simple, naive person doesn't necessarily get convinced by intellectual arguments, but he actually sees, when he sees the punishment and downfall of the Russia, then even the simpleton becomes wise. See, that's the contrast here. The subject of the first phrase is the Pesi, and the subject of the second phrase is the Chacham. The Pesi acquires wisdom only when the Leitz is punished. The Chacham acquires this understanding Bahaskil, with education and illumination, meaning the wise person does not need to see actual punishment to be convinced what is evil. Right, so that's the chiluk. The chiluk basically is that the pesi requires a tangible example. The chacham, however, can achieve it in a more abstract way, and that's what he says. Kolomar. Now the grug gives a. Well, let's see. That's pasuk yud aleph. It's a short one. Kamosha Kasuv, and there's another pasuk that says the same thing earlier. Leitz takeh upesi yarim. You smite the scoffer, and the simpleton becomes wise. Uchamosha Kasuv, and the pasuk similarly says there that the maskil, the one who discerns this.
Yarim doesn't become naked or anything?
Well, yarim is one of those tricky words, because we know that the word arum is also a term for wisdom or cunning. Yeah. Like it says the snake was Arum. A chacham merely has to get tochacha. Tochacha is instruction, and he will understand true knowledge. Okay. Of course, the pasuk might also be referring to the pesi, who's also a leitz, meaning to say that the leitz, who's the pesi, will only learn wisdom when he actually gets hit, as opposed to the chacham, who can understand things from intellectual comprehension. Now, the next pasuk is a little bit of a difficult one to translate. And the Gra has an unusual pshat. Maskil tzaddik lebeis rasha. So maskil, the tzaddik enlightens. The tzaddik provides intellectual discernment. Right? That's why we call the period, of course, the way it's regarded among religious Jews is very different, but we call the maskilim, right? The maskilim, when Jews were politically emancipated in Eastern Europe in the 19th century, so Jews began to attend universities, they got more involved in general culture, and this inaugurated the period that's called the Jewish Enlightenment. The European Enlightenment was earlier, but the Jewish Enlightenment was the 19th century. And those followers, those who were involved in secular education, those who were involved in the renaissance of Hebrew literature outside of Torah writings and even Yiddish literature, although there's a big machlokas among the maskilim about Yiddish, if Yiddish literature had a place, they were called the maskilim, the enlightened ones. Now, they gave themselves that name as kind of a compliment to the fact that, you know, we are enlightened, we are educated, but of course, among traditional Jews, the haskalah is considered to be a term of opprobrium. In other words, to call somebody a maskil is like calling the person, you know, an apikoris and the like. But certainly in biblical Hebrew, the notion of to be maskil, lashon of seichel, is to enlighten someone, to be maskil, to convey truths to someone. So maskil tzaddik lebeis rasha, a tzaddik provides haskala, enlightenment and understanding, to the home or the house or the family of a rasha. Misaleif rishayim l'ra, now misaleif means he, now who's the he? He perverts rishayim towards evil. Now what is he? So look at what the Vilna Gaon says here. Maskil tzaddik lebeis rasha, Hatzadik maskil umadrich b'nei beiso shel rasha sheheim ketanim adayin. V'osam yaskil b'derech tov. So the Gra is translating or interpreting the word base, household, as a reference to young children. Meaning, even in the house of the rasha, as long as the children are relatively young, it is yitachein for a righteous person to have a good influence on them. And therefore, the tzaddik is capable of influencing l'tov, the younger members of the Rasha's family. Now, what is Masalif Rishoyim? Now, look at the next one. HaRishoyim ba'atzmam, however, these are the adults, asher lo yasuru l'mishmato, they will not listen to him, v'yiladu l'kol devar, they will even make fun of what he's saying, who Misalfam Lara Shenotel Hatov Mehem Kasher Lo Yishmu Lo Kamosha Kasavnu Lamala Vinisharu Kulam Ra. Now this is a teaching that's actually based on Gemara, but it's really Kabbalistic, that somehow it says here that because they do not listen to the tzaddik, like a vacuum cleaner, somehow sucks out the good, that's what it means. For who? Meaning the tzaddik himself will direct or pervert the rishayim to remain in the bad place. Now, this is a very, very difficult issue here. I mean, it's one thing to say the rasha gets punished for his own averos, but in what sense is it just or sensible to say that if a rasha has some good qualities, somehow, by virtue of his failure to respond to the tzaddik will recapture or retake or remove somehow even the relatively small good qualities that are within. I mean, in other words, that seems to be saying that the rasha, by virtue of his negative interaction with the tzaddik, will be much worse off than he would have been had he never met the tzaddik at all. Now, to some degree, that might be precisely the point. And the point is that there is no comparison between the Russia who is not exposed to good influences and therefore doesn't remain good, as opposed to the Russia who is exposed to good influences and rejects them. So in a sense, this doesn't mean in a literal way that if the tzaddik, let's say the Russia has, to use a numerical example, 1,000,000 sins and 5 mitzvahs, that doesn't mean that tzaddik will take away the 5 mitzvahs. But in a sense, it means that the Russia is being judged, he will be judged as much more of an evil person because he rejected the tzaddik than would otherwise be the case. Because there is a phrase, actually, that says, Gemara in Chagiga, that every person is born, it's a very amazing picture, every person is born with 2 pre-allocated portions, one in Gan Eden and one in Gehenna. If you are a tzaddik, you get your portion in Gan Eden, and you get the portion of a Russia that was allocated to him. And if you're a Russia, you get your portion, and you get the portion of the tzaddik. Now, in some ways, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, if a person's a Russia, let him get his portion. Why does he get the portion of the tzaddik? But in a sense, since all souls are related, there is a sense in which all good that is done in the world, even by the Russia, is through the influence of the tzaddik. And all evil that is done in the world, even by the tzaddik, is through the negative influences of the Russia. So it is not offensive to divine justice to kind of punish the Russia even for the sins of the tzaddik, and to reward the tzaddik even for the goodness of the Russia, because in effect, the goodness of the Russia came because of the tzaddik, and the evil of the tzaddik came because of the Russia. There is that interconnectedness of neshamos. So that would mean the simple meaning of what he means, that somehow the tzaddik makes the Russia look worse than the Russia would have been had there not been a tzaddik in the house. But nevertheless, it does say that tzaddikim can be good influences and rishayim, at least when they are young. What was it? They have a maisa with the Balatanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, that he had a Talmud who was hanging around, apparently, people who were not good influences. So the Balatanya said, you know, you shouldn't hang around, they're going to have an influence on you. So the Talmud said, Rebbe, don't worry about me, I am very impervious to influences. After all, I have been with you for many years, and I'm no better. So, Baruch Hashem, don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. So the Balatanya quoted the Pasuk. It says, we find like this, the Torah says that if something is chulin, a piece of meat is non-consecrated, and it touches a korban, so literally the Pasuk says it becomes holy. In other words, it has to be eaten with the laws of a korban. But the Gemara explains that when it says touches, it doesn't mean touches, but it means it has to be cooked together so it absorbs the taste of the korban. If it just touches it, if you have a piece of chatas meat, and it just touches a hamburger, and the hamburger doesn't become kadosh. If it gets cooked together, then the taste passes through. Now the Balatanya says, on the other hand, when the Torah talks about if you touch a dead body, you become tamei, there it literally means just touching. So you see, in other words, it is much easier to convey impurity by casual contact than it is to convey holiness. Holiness is not conveyed by casual contact. Holiness is conveyed by absorption. So the Balatanya therefore says, the fact that you didn't absorb from me is no raya that you're not going to absorb from him, because it's much easier to catch that than it is to catch Kedusha. I'm sorry, do you want to say Avi? You want to say
anything? I just had a question.
Yeah.
Is that mean that there's the same amount of goodness and evil in the world?
Say again?
Does that mean there's the same amount of goodness and evil in everybody's world?
It's hard to imagine that is ultimately the case. So I don't know how the portions are going to work out. Maybe they infinitely expandable or contractible. But there is definitely a balance. It does say that when there is great goodness in the world, it'll be counterbalanced with very strong urges for evil, because God always has to create a world where human beings struggle with their choices. Mm-hmm. And when goodness becomes too easy and too obvious, the struggle is not really there. But that's how he interprets it. Misalef Rishayim, the presence of the tzaddik actually perverts the Rishayim in a bad way.
And he took one look at it. He said, "America is the easiest place to be a Jew, and the hardest place to want to be a Jew."
That's right. It's kind of Habu Hatalia. The Jewish people, historically, by their nature, when things are very difficult, we're inspired to be better. Now, this was a big machlokas. This was a big machlokas among the Hasidic rebbes in 19th century, beginning of the 19th century, when Napoleon was waging war against Russia. Do you root for Napoleon, or do you root for the Tsar? Big machlokas among Gedolei Hasidus. Because on one hand, the Tsar at that time was extremely oppressive. This was really one of very, very anti-Semitic, very, very hard and bitter life for Jews. And Napoleon did promise emancipation, civil rights. So there were Rabbanim who were mispalo that Napoleon should defeat the Tsar. But the Balatanya, who was living in Russia, said, "Listen, the Tsar may destroy us bodily, but Napoleon will destroy our spirit by giving us so much freedom." So much. Again, it's a strange thing in many ways, but he said we have to be very worried and concerned. And of course, the truth of the matter is, emancipation did result in the reform movement and everything else. These are the products of Napoleonic emancipation. And it's interesting how, you know, the Russians have this, like the memory of an elephant, as they say. In 1917, when the Tsar was overthrown, Chabad got in big trouble because they were considered to be Tsarist sympathizers because they sided with the Tsar against Napoleon, you know, 100 years before. And they even got a medal. The Balatanya got a medal, whatever it is, servant of the emperor or whatever it was, and the KGB or whatever it was called then, the Cheka, held that against them as a counter-revolutionary thing. Yeah. Okay. Pasuk Yud Gimel states, it's again a famous pasuk. Otem azno mizakas tal. Otem, he who stuffs his ear from the cry of the poor. Meaning you make believe you don't hear. So what happens is, what goes around comes around. Gam hu yikra. If you have a need to call to others, lo yeyaneh, you will not be answered. This is the nature of life, that everybody needs something at some point in life. Now, not everybody will need money, it may not be that, but a person either needs a friend, needs advice, needs counsel, needs friendship, needs support. And the availability of those resources in the world depends on how much that we're willing to give to others. And he who kind of shuts himself out from the sufferings of others, well, maybe he'll be lucky if he'll never need anything. But that's going to be rare. And when he needs to turn to people, people will not be there for him at the time. And therefore, one should... basically, the teaching is that to be altruistic and unselfish is actually in your own selfish best interest. Because it will give you what you need when you need it. And here the Gra says, indeed, Pshuta Kamashma, he says, this pasuk means exactly what it says. We don't have to embellish it. But then he offers another explanation as well. V'inyano, ki ayetzer tov nikra ish miskein v'chacham. So now he's borrowing from imagery in Kehelis. The yetzer tov is called, miskein is a poor person, a poor wise man. V'kasher otem ozno mishmoa kol zakaso. So that's what he's saying. The dal, the poor, refers to the Yetzer Tov. You shut yourself off from what the Yetzer Tov is saying. Gam hu yikra v'lo yayona. When you eventually want to call out, you will not be answered. Again, the Gra is pointing out, if you remember the first 9 chapters of Mishlei, which are really, they are really a long, long introduction to the short aphorisms, is really what is called a series of poems of wisdom and Torah. And in fact, the speaker is actually the Torah. The Torah is speaking as a woman that is beckoning people to come to her. And in those speeches, the woman was basically saying, if you spurn me and you reject me, and there will later come a time in which you desire me, you will cry for me and I will not be there. The concept of the person that's rejected. So the Gra is saying, that's exactly the point, that if a person does not respond to the stirrings of the Yetzer Tov, it will be harder and harder and harder to do tshuva. Again, not that it's impossible, but one, just as the Rambam writes, God hardened Paro's heart. How does the Rambam understand that? That's the well-known teaching that if a person sins long enough, their capacity for free will is very much impaired. It becomes like an addiction. Initially, you could say, the person has a choice to take cocaine or not. It's relatively easy. Take it or don't take it. Take it or leave it. Once you've developed an addictive pattern of behavior, it is still possible to change, but it's extremely difficult. And a person might even argue, I'm not responsible for taking drugs now because I can't help myself. And maybe that is true. But here's the problem. Being in the situation where you become unable to control your drives was a function of choices that you made to begin with. And therefore, one could be accountable for the consequences of all of that, just like drunk driving, right? One might say, hey, you know, you killed somebody while you're driving a car drunk. I mean, you had no control of yourself, right? I mean, at that moment, you certainly did not intend to hurt anybody. But that was a self-inflicted condition that you achieved by choices that you make. So here, too, we're saying that if you don't respond to the voices that beckon within you, eventually, even when you'll want to change, you'll call out, you'll want to change, you will find it difficult to change. And that's how the Gra understands this. And he connects the word dal to the word misken in Goheles, which is a synonym. Misken is a poor person, and the Yetzer Tov is called the ish misken. Okay, let's do one more verse. Matan baseser yichpe of. V'shochad b'cheik chema aza. So matan b'seiser, the giving in a private, concealed way, which this refers to giving tzedakah in a way that is not embarrassing for the recipient. That's the notion of giving anonymously, so the recipient does not know that he's getting it from you and that you don't know. Actually, it's better to do it both ways, but... primarily to protect the recipient, but it's better that you don't know and he doesn't know. Do it in a very anonymous way to preserve his dignity. Yichpe af, it covers up fury, meaning divine anger. The shochat and bribery b'cheik, in one's lap, chema aza, strong anger. Now again, the problem is there's no verb here, so the question is, what is the verb that's supposed to go after the word cheik? So look how the Gra says. First of all, there are two words for anger here. There's af and chema. Af and chema often go together, right? Moshe says, ki yagarti b'mei ha'afa ha'chema, I'm afraid of af and chema. So the Gra says, what is the difference? Af hu haschala sakas. Af is the beginning of a feeling of anger. And it comes from the fact that sometimes that feeling starts with a twitch in the nose. Af is the nose. The nose might get red. Chema comes from heat, warmth. That's when you're all agitated and you're hot. So af is the techila of anger. Shelo yaschil olav klal hakas. That the koach of dignified tzedakah that respects people prevents even the beginning of divine anger from coming. It elicits so much mercy. Aval, but hanosein shochad b'cheik, one who gives bribery into someone's lap, hu male al atzmo, he will bring upon himself not only af, but the fury of chema, which is maisa, that is the retaliation, hanasa misof hakas, and it will be chama aza, not just regular chema, but chema aza. Now, it's not clear exactly what he means to say. So what is shochad b'cheik? In other words, he says, it's the opposite of matan b'seiser. So if it just means you're giving tzedakah openly, it's hard to understand why that would create chema. Is the suggestion, does it mean that God has the chema, or is it the suggestion that the recipient, perhaps, is angry, meaning to say, you do a favor to a person in a manner that embarrasses him and humiliates him, then not only will your favor not be appreciated, but your favor itself will elicit very, very bitter anger. and retaliation, because a person's dignity, a person's self-respect is more important. I'm not sure. In other words, in that sense, the chema e'aza is referring to the recipient's response. That might be. Another aspect might be the word shochad, although the Gra doesn't clearly make this point, and that is, shochad means a bribe. And that is, if you give tzedakah because you want to help somebody, and you do so to respect that person, so then you cover up the beginning of af. But if you do it because you want to bribe Hashem, you figured you're paying God off, and your motive is God takes bribes, that attitude towards doing mitzvos not only does not give you mercy, but that elicits deep revenge. We made this point a number of times. What does it mean to bribe God, and what type of attitude is it that bribes God? You know, we are so used to the idea that religion is concerned with morality. At least in theory. I mean, even Islam, you know, in theory, is concerned with morality. How they carry it out is another question. That we think the very definition of a religion is kind of a belief in God that mandates that you behave in certain ways. But, you know, that was not true in paganistic cultures. If you go back to Greek and Roman, the gods did not really care whether you were moral or not. I mean, there were discussions of morality, Aristotle. I mean, there are philosophical discussions of morality, but they were not grounded in any religious belief. There was no idea that Zeus commands you to be a good person. And in fact, the Greek and Roman gods were just as dysfunctional as we are. You know, they had problems in their marriages and child abuse and everything else. I mean, there were no, you know, they were like superheroes who had all of these dysfunctional families. And the only thing religion demanded was actually bribing. The concept was you paid your god off. You brought him sacrifices. You brought him your child, maybe, even a child sacrifice. And the notion was, as long as you paid your god off, you were free to do whatever you wanted to do. Morality was a separate issue. And one of the great chidushim of Torah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not take bribes. Hashem gives us obligations to perfect our souls and to make us into better people, but it's not a payoff to Hashem in any particular way. And that is why one might suggest why the Nevi'im are always critical of korbanos, right? The Reform movement makes a whole point when they say that ritual is not important, and they always point out to what they call prophetic Judaism. And prophetic Judaism is justice, mercy, compassion, social welfare. And they point to all the verses in Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu where Hashem says, who wants your korbanos? Now, the truth of the matter is, it's not true that the Nevi'im don't talk about ritual. In Yirmiyahu, there are many chapters that talk about Shabbos. In Yechezkel, there are chapters that talk about keeping kosher. The Nevi'im do not only talk about justice. However, the one insight that is true is, the thing that they keep on criticizing is korbanos. They don't criticize Shabbos. They don't have God say, why do you keep Shabbos? You're immoral. Why do you keep kosher? Because the answer is, yeah, you're immoral. That's a bad thing. But Shabbos and kashrus are still good things. We're not going to say, because you're bad in one area, Hashem doesn't value the other ones. But korbanos are different. Because here's the whole point. The whole purpose of a korban is to teach me to be subservient to Hashem and become a better person. If you're not using the korban to transform your morality, then you're using the korban like a pagan uses the korban to bribe the Almighty. At that point, not only is it not a mitzvah, it becomes an aveira. See, that's why Hashem is not going to say, if you're dishonest in business and you oppress people, your Shabbos is worthless. That actually is not true. I mean, you have many, many aveiras, but your Shabbos is still a Shabbos. But your korban is indeed worthless. Because if the korban is not perceived as a bribe to Hashem, but it's perceived as a vehicle of transformation, then when it is not doing the job, it becomes, your attitude becomes one of a bribe, then it becomes a sin to bring the korban. And that's why the pasuk says in the Mishlei, Zevach Rishayim Toeva, the sacrifice of a rasha is an abomination. It does not say the Shabbos of a rasha is an abomination. It is the sacrifice. And so therefore the insight is very, very true that the Nevi'im were extremely critical of insincere korbanos, which were accompanied by immoral lives, And they said better not to bring the korban at all. So it could be that that's what it might mean, that shochad. That shochad might mean the attitude that you're buying God off. And that becomes something that elicits chema aza. Let's just finish the point. He brings a brisa of Lamed Beis Midais to Rav Yaisi Haglili. This is an interesting brisa, which is printed in the back of Maseches Brachos. You know, we know Rabbi Yishmael taught there are 13 methods of interpreting the Torah. Those are the methodologies that are used for halacha. Rabbi Elazar, Rav Yaisi, has a list of 32 methods of interpretation that are used for agada. They're essentially rules of language, really. They're syntax and language, most of them. And one of the rules is that sometimes a verb is not repeated in the second clause of a sentence. So the way the Braisa learns, Matan Baseser Yichba'af, giving charity in a hidden way covers up anger. And similarly, so it's not contrast, and similarly, Shochad Bachek, which is a good thing, we'll see how it's defined, and you repeat the word Yichbe. Yichbe will cover up Chema Aza. In other words, it's elliptical. It is a phrase that is eliminating the verb. And we can even talk this way in English. We could say, charity will cover up af, and mitzvos, bitter anger. Now, mitzvos will cover up bitter anger. So the Gra says, according to that interpretation, the word yichbe, cover up, is going on the second part of the sentence as well, and therefore it would turn out that shochad b'cheik is not a negative statement, it would be a positive. So what would that therefore mean? So he says it would brise at Lamed Beis Midas Rav Yaisi Tani she yichbe koi gam al hashochad, which would make shochad good. Essentially it would be a synonym for charity in that way. But the Gra says if that's what it means, Efshir Lafarish Kain Allah Kaddish Baruch Hu, we certainly cannot be saying God likes bribes. The Hakasiv, it says Beferish in Tehillim, Asher Lo Yikach Shochad. He doesn't take a bribe. And therefore, he learns this way. Ha'emes, that even like the Brisa, what it means is like this. He twists it around a little bit. Im Lo Yitein Matan Besejin Li Yisrael, Yitztarech Litein Li Acherim, Kedei L'Shachech V'Shiyich Bechema Aza. In other words, what the pasuk means is the following. If you give your charity in the right way, you will cover up divine wrath, even the beginning. If you don't, you will have to pay bribes to government officials in order to avoid divine honor, divine anger. In other words, it's not saying shochad b'cheik is a good thing, but it's saying that don't think you're going to save money by skimping on charity. What you don't pay in charity, you're going to have to pay in bribes for your taxes or whatever it would be. That's how he interprets it. So it's not mishabeach shochad. It is simply saying that eventually you're going to have to lose your money one way or the other. This is what people often confuse cause and effect. Sometimes a person says, I'm giving too much tzedakah. I'm going to stop giving tzedakah because I'm giving more than I should give. And then their car breaks down and the refrigerator has to be replaced. And they think to themselves, wow, Baruch Hashem, I stopped giving that tzedakah. I now have money for the car and for the refrigerator. In point of fact, it's really often the opposite. if you'd give the tzedakah, the car wouldn't have broken down. But the pshat is, you're going to lose the money one way or the other. So it's better to use it for good reasons. This is what they have the story just related to this. A man in England was very involved in collecting money for yeshivos and in traveling around for Kiruv Rechokim. And his wife felt that he should be at home more. He was working too hard, and she wanted him to stop his activities. So he wanted to go to the Chafetz Chaim and ask the Chafetz Chaim for psak halacha. What should he do? And the Chafetz Chaim was already very old, and he really wasn't giving private audiences that much. But, when he used to eat, people would sit around, and the Chafetz Chaim would say a little Devar Torah before benching. And often, this story is repeated over and over again, that the Ruach HaKodesh of the Chafetz Chaim was such that the exact thought that he chose to talk about was always the answer to the questions of the people that were there. So the Chafetz Chaim said that David HaMelech says in the 23rd Psalm, Ach tov v'chesed yirdefuni, that loving kindness and goodness shall pursue me. Now, pursuing implies something bad, something you're trying to get away from. So what does David HaMelech mean when he says, goodness should pursue me? So the Chafetz Chaim said, everybody will always be pursued by things. There will be many negative things that happen in life. Your money gets used up. Your energy gets used up. And you can't escape it. It is the nature of life that there are going to be challenges and tensions and nervousness. And therefore, kind of things you want to run away from. But David HaMelech is praying, may my anxieties arise from good that I'm doing rather than from not the good things. And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim was saying, if you don't do the good, you're not going to escape the tensions. You will just have the tensions in other areas. And the man basically left without talking to the Chafetz Chaim. He said he had the answer to his question. Okay, we'll see you next week.
Thank you.